Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think?
Welcome back to From Python Import Podcast. I am not Mike Piernot.
No, and I am not Chris Miller.
And we are not currently sitting in my backyard. No, we are at PyCon 2012. And all of these statements are lies.
Is this like the Scooby-Doo ending from Wayne's World?
Very much so. But the one thing we are here to do is we're here to share our interview with Christine and Sandy from PyLadies. PyLadies is an esteemed organization, I have to say. I was really impressed with their turnout and their enthusiasm for getting women involved with Python. Christine Chung, who is currently the president, was someone that I worked with when I was at Mahalo.
As I understand it, you inflicted an architecture on them.
I did. I inflicted an architecture on poor Christine and the team.
And they had to live with that.
And they happily went and ran with it once I went away. So I was very happy to see how far she has come in the past 3 or 4 years. And I was very proud of her. I really was. And, you know, I don't know that I have that right, but I was proud of her. And I'm very happy to see the things that PyLadies are doing for community education, tutorials, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and there's been some other groups that are using, I think, some of those materials. I think there was a Boston group that just did a Learning Python meetup that was focused on women, but also involved, you know, getting men in, but, you know, getting new people in.
Yes.
Who might otherwise be intimidated by programming or put off by programming, and giving them a real gentle, kind, get beginners involved and excited in the community and in the, you know, in the programming kind of experience. And that's really great that I think these groups are doing this and that they're building these materials, and this trend is seems like something that's growing and spreading to other areas too. People are getting really inspired by it.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that, you know, Python really brings to the table is that flexibility. You know, you don't have to be coding up websites to use Python in your everyday job. It was something that got me thinking about, you know, as a manager now where we work, you know, I don't get to go into the code very often, but I do find ways to use my Python every day to do other things that help me manage projects and stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that was one of the things that it kind of opened my eyes and made me realize, oh, hey, just because I'm not doing, you know, the heavy stuff over here doesn't mean I can't be doing some code over there. So right. It was really a nice eye-opener for me.
Yeah. Well, we had a really fun conversation, so without further ado, let's get to it. Poolside, I believe.
Excellent. All right, and now the PyLadies. See, is it going? Test. Yes, it is.
Yay.
Yay. All right. Chris Miller and Mike Piernot.
Hello.
All sitting here with Sandy Strong and Christine Chung.
Hello.
Hello.
From PyLadies. Tell us about PyLadies.
Well, PyLadies was kind of started because there's so few female programmers, and especially Python programmers, and we're all just, like, super fans of the Python programming language, and kind of going to tech meetups and stuff, sometimes you're only the only female in the room other than, like, a recruiter. And, you know, soon the other, you know, other females started, like, noticing each other, and, like, maybe we should make a group, form a group, you know, support each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then through that, we kind of started out with a first event trying to teach an intro to Python class just for women to see how that would, you know, impact the community.
How did it?
Yeah, our first event went really well. It was held in May 2010, and we had, I guess, about 30 people attend.
I think it was more than that.
More than that.
Maybe like
closer to 40.
Because we had to add extra tables and chairs.
Yeah, we actually had to bring in extra seats. And mostly women from a surprisingly diverse amount of backgrounds. We had everything from professors to people in the medical profession to people who said, hey, I have some spare time and I want to pick this up as a new hobby. And a lot of them also said, hey, I have this problem I need to solve and computers can help me do it. And hey, look, Python's fun.
A few frustrated C++ and Java programmers.
Yes, and some people, even some poor folks.
I've been one of those.
I've been there myself. But that sounds incredibly cool. So you get these people from these incredibly diverse backgrounds picking up this language because it's, what, easy to use? Because
it's easy, it's fun, and the community is great. The community is really supportive. I don't think there's any other language that I've worked with that has quite the community that Python has, really.
Yeah, and if you're working with something like .NET, you're locked into Microsoft stuff. Oh. And Python is cross-platform, doesn't matter, you know, it's Windows, Linux, or Mac.
Yeah.
Everyone uses something different. It just works.
So, the main, it started out in L.A.
Yes.
And now you've got a Washington, D.C. chapter?
Yes.
Yes.
As well?
Yes.
How are you going about expanding? What's your, do you have a strategy? Is it just, you know, please, you know, start chapters? And
it is. It's, you know, luckily we haven't, you know, had to do a lot of footwork into reaching out to communities because we just have women from all over the country and even the world. We kind of actually have, you know, a lot of activity in Australia. Mm-hmm. And it's just, we meet women from, you know, online, from conferences like DjangoCon or PyCon, and they come to us, they're like, I'm in New York, is there a Pilates for us?
Yeah.
We're like, well, you can help start it, or if you know someone that starts it. And so...
Yeah, we actually had two just yesterday who were from, one from Alabama, one from Texas, saying, hey, do you have a chapter out there? You know, what are the resources that I can access remotely? Because there aren't a whole lot of people out here who can mentor me.
Right.
So in LA, we're lucky. We have a really big Python community. And
yeah, well, it was stellar.
Yeah.
The idea is that, you know, even though the communities are smaller, we want to give them resources, even though we may not necessarily be able to, like, fly all the time to, like, Alabama or Texas to help them out. But we create a starter kit and help them out as much as possible, hand-holding, you know, through the process. Because it can be kind of scary. And it was actually kind of even scary for us in the beginning to see how the community would react.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think with the, you know, there's been a big thrust since, what, 2009, 2010 on increasing the diversity within the group. I have to imagine that this just kind of played into that. Was that the case? Or
I think certainly that had something to do with the influence of the community is ready to receive that sort of initiative, and they just took somebody actually taking the initiative and saying, hey, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. I want to help actually do something to increase the diversity in the community.
What kind of challenges do women face breaking into programming?
I think, you know, it comes from an early age, I think, because... Mm-hmm. Girls get a Barbie and boys get a truck. That's really, really black and white.
But now they get computer engineer Barbie.
Sell that at a Walmart, even though I hate Walmart. It's not advertised. It's like a niche Barbie.
Mm-hmm. Also, you'd have to have a parent who knew to get you the computer science Barbie.
I did write in for computer engineer Barbie, and my daughter loves it, so. Yeah.
No, but I think that's a good point. I mean, there's this... I know there's been a lot of lamenting and a lot of movement in the science and math fields, you know, getting more women into that.
Yeah.
Because things have been skewed since the 40s and 50s. And,
yeah.
And all that just carries all the way through. I mean, even despite what happened in the 60s and 70s.
And it's interesting, too, because initially, I've read a couple articles on this, initially the computer industry was primarily women.
Mm-hmm.
Or very
mm-hmm.
early on, you know, computer mm-hmm. operators. And then that somehow shifted away. I think it probably had something to do with...
I think they realized it was cool, and then all the boys came in and kicked them out and did it for themselves.
maybe. But
that's just my, little opinion piece.
Just jerk boys.
It's certainly possible. Wouldn't be the first time I've found
but there was a definitely,
even
if that wasn't necessarily the case, there was a definite shift from a lot of the early punch cards, you know, early programmers were mostly women. All of a sudden, it's just men's work now.
Yeah.
I'm wondering
wondering
if that starts to happen around World War II as the sciences begin to use the punch cards and the computer systems further. I mean, if any listeners have any ideas, please do write us in. We'd love to be schooled.
Yeah.
Another issue that people don't mention very often that I think programming and computing is kind of a class issue as well, because when you go to conferences, they're like, oh yeah, I've been programming since I was 5 and I had like, you know, all this stuff. And you know, if you were 5 and you had a computer, chances are your family had to be able to afford a computer or were lucky enough to have resources to have a computer. And sometimes you may end up in situations where you only had one computer, you mm-hmm. know, and then who gets it?
Right.
Right. You know, that's a much bigger challenge to address. I think as strange as that sounds, you know, and I'm not saying that the gender gap within programming is easy to address by any stretch of the imagination, but the class gap.
Well, that was
the
one
economic
of things,
gap.
That was one of the things that the OLPC project was working
yes.
on.
Yeah.
And they did a pretty good job for as long as it's been going on. I don't know where things stand now, but
yeah, I don't know. I haven't followed it lately.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, at the very least, so certainly in technology for people who've grown up right now. You know, we grew up in computers, so pretty expensive, you know. Mm-hmm. But now it's like you can get a netbook for $100.
Sure.
Right.
You know, and you can program on that. You're not going to be able to do a lot of things, but you know, if you want to just get your feet wet and play with a computer, it's more accessible than it used to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go on.
Oh, it was just, you know, adding on that fact, now that computers are so much cheaper, now it's more accessible. So now we should try to promote diversity because
absolutely.
Not locked to a certain exclusive
class.
Well,
you're talking to two guys with, you know, three daughters between us. So, you know, we're all over that. I mean, my daughter programs right now. She's playing around in Logo, and she's done a little bit of Python and Turbo stuff and all that. So, you know, she's starting to find out that it's fun. And that's really, I mean, I don't think any of us programs because we necessarily like the hours.
Right.
You know, it's the fun of it. It's
the challenge.
The
aha
moments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That eureka moment. Yes.
Oh, see, I always refer to that as the oh shit, it works moment.
Yeah.
Holy shit, this works. By the way, we have the explicit tag, so feel free to let fly. Starting with you, Cindy, how did you come to Python? How did you come into the community?
Well, I did biology in college. And I graduated, and I went to a women's college, but they didn't have a CS major. Yeah, so
boy, the irony is.
Oops. So I should have, in hindsight, I should have gone to a different school because I wanted to do computers. I knew that's what I wanted to do, but I was like, oh, biology's pretty cool. And so I graduated with a biology degree and wound up interviewing for computer jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out doing tech support, like desktop support, and then I wound up on an operations team doing server stuff. And all the while kind of working on my own hours and doing projects on the side and doing extra things for work to kind of automate myself out of a job. Yep. And then after that, I went to work at a Python shop, a Django shop, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was there for a year and a half doing server programming.
Mm-hmm.
And then also some DevOps-ish type of tasks as well. It was a lot of fun. And then I wound up, so that's kind of how I got into the community. I mm-hmm. knew the ops team that I was on at my previous company was, they used Python there for the games that they wrote.
Sure.
And so I took a class in Python. I'd mm-hmm. previously taken classes in Java, C++, and self-studied PHP, MySQL, things that everybody kind of comes into. But I guess it's probably how I got into Python was my job that I was on the ops team and the developers were using Python there.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's cool.
How about you, Christine?
Well, I mean, I always liked computers, you know. So when I was lucky enough. My dad gave me a computer when I was probably like 10 or 12. I was really, really fortunate, and so, you know, I was the type that loved Legos. You know, give me something, I'll disassemble it and try to assemble it back again. Typical engineering type thing. You know, mm-hmm. break things, put it back together. And obviously, when I got a computer, I was like, oh my god, now I want to learn how to use this. So I always dreamt of like how do I program, but I never had the resources available to me. It was tough. And so I knew I wanted to get into computer science. So I went to school for computer science, very classic route. College, computer science, get a job, doing mm-hmm. programming. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We just kind of go on from there. Right?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about Pilates also is that sometimes women feel intimidated because they're like, oh, I didn't graduate college. Oh, I studied English. Oh, I did something else. But, I mean, we have, you know, some of our board members are not computer science majors. They're journalism majors or biology majors that got into programming, and now they are professionals. And I come across women who feel that they don't have the capability of programming just because they didn't go to school for it. And we're like, no. And we're trying to have these events and workshops to support them.
Yeah. And then another thing, too, is in the computer industry, it's not what piece of paper you have. It's really what you can do. And I know a ton of people who don't have no degree / not an engineering degree, and they're great at their jobs.
Oh, yeah. One of the finest programmers I know is in art history.
Yeah.
Who got his degree in art history. Mine was in English.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's very common.
I got a computer engineering degree, and it basically taught me how to get a degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else, and, you know, and how to learn things on my own. So other than that, like, it's all been whatever I've been able to pick up. So.
Sure. So where do you see Pilates going? Where would you like it to go, and how do you think you get there?
I think right now we're just trying to, we've built a lot of momentum. We grew really fast, so we're just trying to stabilize it, continuing with our workshops and events and trying to make it accessible to, I think also it's not only for women, but also mm-hmm. for men, because our events end up to be a 50-50 split.
So some people have the false impression that, oh, it's a women's only club, or these workshops are only for women. That's not the case. We have a lot of men coming, and it benefits both genders, because now women feel comfortable. They're not the only woman in the room. Now there's a lot of us. And for the men, now they get used to women programming, and mm-hmm. they just help each other. Mm-hmm. And it's very beneficial
getting,
for everybody.
Getting to a space where everybody can be equal, I think, is
exactly,
really important.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of the original message of feminism that's been lost about, you know, now there's this perception that, oh my God, it's about being dominated by the women, and the women want to, and they're like, no, like, can we just be equals? And
yeah,
like,
can we just talk to one another
and, like
people?
And make cool shit? Like,
right, well, and that's really what it comes down to. We all want to build cool shit. Right?
I mean, and it's also trying to find more, like, get more people developing, build a bigger and better community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's getting anyone, whether it be man, woman,
or
alien.
Getting fresh blood in the pool. Of
yeah, and so I feel that we probably feel that women are such an untapped resource because they are just let down for whatever society reasons, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as future goals, personally, I would, you know, outreach has always been something on my mind, mm-hmm. like even from going through college, because I was one of, you know, a handful of women in computer science major, probably, I think about 50, 60 graduating majors, and I was like one of two. But like I said, I feel that it's more of a growing up thing, mm-hmm. you know, and you'd kind of like go to make girls feel comfortable with computing. Mm-hmm. So maybe it takes, you know, some strong woman out there to go out to these schools or make, you know, like talk to kids or talk to,
get kids,
you know,
hooked young, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before they find other things to do, show them computers and say, hey, this is really cool. You can make things with this, you know.
Yep.
And give them the confidence to, you know, do what they want. They don't feel intimidated. Like, oh, I like programming, but oh no, I'm going to be judged by society as a nerd. And, you know, you can do whatever you want. You can be a nerd, or you can, you know, go out into high fashion and also be in programming, or be, you know, musician or museum curator, but, you know, write scripts to, like, you know, organize your gallery prints or something. I don't know.
Yeah, programming is a skill like anything else. It's not necessarily a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And some people feel to me like, oh, programming, now I have to know everything. And
you can never know everything.
I think that's what Code Year and Code Academy is trying to encourage, too, that everyone should learn a little code. They don't have to be an expert, but it's definitely a useful skill for lots of different things, not just computers itself.
Yeah.
So how can we guys help? How can we help? I mean, we want to encourage this stuff, too.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please.
How do we eradicate the plight of the programmer?
Oh!
Hot topic over the past week or so, and oh my God, I just want to, like, punch all those people in the face.
I think it's a passing joke fad.
I'm sorry, what?
You've not heard of this.
What? I've not heard of this.
Oh, God.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no.
Let's do it. Come on.
So, I think programming started as a joke.
Oh,
it started as a joke that went, that people actually started taking seriously.
But these people exist.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the bad thing.
So, I think it started either a Facebook page or something.
Popped collars, standing desks.
Oh.
Five-fingered shoes, paleo diet.
Big sunglasses, hoodies.
Yeah. So what they do is they, you know, write their Ruby on Rails and feel amazing, and they're like, well, I'm going to go out to the club. You know?
All right, yes, I have heard of this. And I think, unfortunately, I've seen some here.
Yeah. I blame Web 2.0.
Yeah.
I've seen people like start doing job postings in programmer speak now, and that frightens me. Like, if you are trying to hire that, like, I don't want to work there.
Yeah, never. I don't want to work around those people, male or female.
Yeah.
Right, oh, definitely not. Absolutely not.
Not cool.
Some of us became programmers to get away from those people.
Yes.
Those people live in marketing.
Yeah.
That's where they should stay.
Marketing and
sales. No, the jobs are trying to invade our space.
Well, I mean, it's so mainstream. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's such a mainstream profession now, and the money is good. The jobs are very plentiful. So everybody's like, wait a minute. I mean, Python, Ruby, these are all really high-level scripting languages. It's extremely easy to get into. Mm-hmm. So
it's no Perl.
It's, well,
no, that's true. It's no Perl.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
Editorial comments withheld.
Perl's a thing.
Perl 6 is here.
Yeah.
It's called Ruby.
This is true.
Sorry, I came out of the tip-off last night. All right.
4 hours of lightning talks that are basically all trolling. Yes.
It's self-trolling. I was impressed by the amount of self-trolling.
It was pretty bad.
All right.
I'm actually going to jump in because I
have
a question.
Go for it.
So since you mentioned Legos, what do you think about the new line of girl-friendly Legos?
my
yeah.
Girl
friendly. Well, what does that even mean?
You've probably seen that ad where it's like Legos and there's this
girl
in the overalls holding
back from the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Is what it is. I think was the caption.
I mean, Legos is. I already think of it as a unisex toy.
Yeah,
right. Just sort of drive it.
Yeah, Legos don't really have gender.
Yeah.
They're just blocks.
I think my biggest objection is that the characters are a different scale than the minifigs.
Mm. Oh.
Which freaks me out.
What?
Yes.
I'm so glad I'm ignorant.
Yeah.
I live
in
ignorance.
I live under a rock.
Although, okay, this is totally random, but it's kind of related to the gender issue. Okay. Someone told me that they were trying to shop for their child, and they could not find a gender-neutral coloring book. That it was either like...
That's
like motorcycles and cars, or it was like, you know, like ponies. And
wow.
Paint. Yeah.
I hadn't actually considered it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hmm. Not just like scenes, like random scenes.
Yeah, like there's
color.
No like just
really?
Landscape. It's just like
is that
you know,
this is
trucks,
a coloring book I used to get,
you know.
Like fish or you know other animals.
Sure.
Interesting.
That's really interesting because I know when I was a kid these things existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
why
only
the hell
just
don't...
Lego, not Lego man, Lego
right,
woman.
Exactly. Right.
Well, so the interesting thing I've found. So I have a 4-year-old and she's really in love with Legos and she's super super excited about the Lego Friends line. And so we've got her a few kits. I was originally pretty skeptical about them, but I have to say I'm kind of impressed. So like the first kit we got for her, she wanted Olivia's Science Workshop, where Olivia's doing. She's got like a beaker and a microscope and a robot, and she's like doing cool science stuff. And then the second kit she got is a like fashion design studio where it's all like tools and building things. And she's got a laptop.
Oh, nice!
And what I've also heard through my wife's contacts with the early childhood PTA is that there are a lot of young boys that are getting these sets, and they like that there are unique parts like the laptop, and they like that there are different colors and different options and things. And so like. 5 and 6-year-old boys are thinking that the Lego Friends set is like a really amazing thing. So I was initially skeptical, but maybe there's
maybe Lego
here.
Is
it's
the
not,
product.
Yeah.
And what it sounds like is they're injecting story and character into it.
Yes.
And like that, you know, that, and yeah, I can see that being an attraction, you know, regardless of giving it a new look and that kind of thing. As long as they're not just creating pink and white Legos for girls,
yeah.
I mean.
They're also lavender.
Lavender.
All
right.
Well, a lot of those toys from that era, I guess, like Erector sets, Lincoln Logs,
sure.
Legos. It's very like generic. Here's the materials. Go engineer something without the story. And kids do love story and character driven.
Maybe they just didn't have that marketing team. That's like, well, how can we like target it?
Well, that's
audience.
Entirely possible. I mean, they've had that huge. Well, and honestly. I think one of the interesting things about the Lego market is, you know, they don't make their money on the toys for kids anymore. It's folks like Mike who buy the Death Star.
Yes.
You know?
My daughter picked it
I
out for me.
I want that, like, $5,000 Millennium Falcon.
Oh,
like,
my God, it's still killing me, because it was, like, $500 when it came out. And I was
now
like,
it's, like, so expensive.
I tried to get it on eBay, and I'm like, oh, I'm not spending $2,000 for Legos. I cannot justify that.
No, but I mean, I think it's, you know, it's the adults that grew up is where they make their money now.
It's true.
And they gotta break back into the kids market, and I'm wondering if this is how they do it.
That's a good point.
It's
kind
of strange.
Interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah. So I guess to close it out, where can people find you? Where can they contact you?
Pilates.com. You can email us.
info@pilates.com.
We also have a Facebook page, Twitter.
Twitter is @pilates.
Yeah. And for guys to help, they can come mentor workshops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They could come to events. We have hackathons, you know, that open to anyone. Even if you're an expert Python programmer, like, well, I don't need to go intro Python workshop, but we have these open events where everyone can come chill and hang.
Yeah, those are a lot of fun because you usually find people who are working or interested in the same things with varying levels of skill, and so you kind of group those people together. They'll naturally group together and help each other with the projects that work.
Or if you work in a company and you're like, hey, you want to, you know, maybe we should sponsor Pilot Ace, you know, for the good of the community.
Sure. All right, then. Well, I think we'll wrap it here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah,
and we will catch up again either at next PyCon or hopefully before then.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you're in town.
Oh, yeah.
I know how much you love that.
If you find yourselves in Cleveland by some misfortune.
There's more chance of us being in L.A., I think, than them coming to Cleveland.
They're closer to L.A. right now.
From Python Import Podcast is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 license and is filmed before a live studio audience. No, not really. Music is provided by Jonathan Colton. You can check him out at jonathancolton.com. For more of us, visit fromPythonImportPodcast.com.
Code monkey like Fritos. Code monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code monkey, very simple man.
big, warm, fuzzy secret heart. Code monkey like you. Code monkey like you.
Welcome back to From Python Import Podcast. I am Knight. I am...
Take two.
All right.